The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get payouts in as fast as 2 hours. There's so many bet types. My favorite, same game parlay bets. There's live betting, player props, futures. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. To get started now, sign up. Please use the promo code COLIN. COLIN. FanDuel Sportsbook makes it easy.
Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. This is our 10th episode, milestone episode, the number 10, which I am excited about. We got another great guest, one who's about to be named to his second All-Star game and is also helping lead the Bulls to the top seed in the Eastern Conference. You know, they've gone from non-playoff team last year to right up there at the top of the Eastern Conference, a lot like us in the Western Conference. And so it's been beautiful to watch. And I also want to shout out JJ Redick and the Old Man in the Three podcast. Obviously, we had JJ on. I think it was our second episode that we had JJ on. If you haven't heard that episode, it was an incredible episode. Definitely go back and check that out if you have not heard that one. But I highly recommend everyone checks out JJ's show this week because, you know, when you're doing these things, you can kind of feel like, all right, that was a good episode, you know, and you can feel like, yo, we crushed that one. And I think, you know, I get that feeling at times, you know, when we're doing our show. But I also got that feeling when I was recording JJ's show, Old Man and the Three, with JJ and Tommy. I thought, like, number one, the conversation went on 60 minutes longer than it was supposed to go. And not one time was guys checking their phone to see what time it is, worried about the time. And that's how you know when you're in a great moment. You don't have anyone worried about the time or checking, or, you know, JJ, they had a flight out. They came to San Francisco. They had a flight out. They weren't worried about their flight and checking the flight schedule. Because when you're in that moment, you have to really just embrace it and dive all the way into it. And that's how you create greatness in anything, not just in podcasting, in anything. And I thought that was what was going on the other day when we were recording Old Man and the Three. I thought it was a great segment. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. JJ and those guys, they had some great wine for us to drink. So it was an amazing time. So go check that out. Also, check out episode number 2 of the Draymond Green Show if you have not already. That was a great episode. JJ is, as we spoke about on that episode, he's kind of a pioneer in this podcast space for current players. And although he's not a current player anymore, I think he's been doing in the podcast space now for 6 years, which would take him to eight or nine of his career. And so he kind of, you know, helped make this lane available to a lot of us. And it's been beautiful. And he's done an incredible job. And so check that out. Check both of those out. But before we get to Zach, as you know, we're going to go around the association. But we're also going to step out this outside of the association and talk a little NFL. And I think that's where we will start at. Man, that divisional round was the craziest, not only divisional round in NFL history, but that was the craziest playoff weekend in NFL history. You're talking 4 walk-off scores. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, it just doesn't happen. And I think led by the absolute last game of the weekend, which were the Chiefs and Bills. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is insane. 13 seconds, and you get down the field and get a field goal. That's unheard of. And, you know, when you have things that happen like that in the game, all night, I actually read the Bills coach, Sean McDermott. He said, I've watched those last 13 seconds a million times. And you either handle that one or two ways. Some people, for instance, myself, I have not watched the entire Game 7 of the NBA Finals to this day. Still haven't been able to watch the entire thing. And so I think you go one or two ways. You either don't watch it at all, which may not be the right thing to do because it still lives in my head because I don't think I've really laid it to rest. Or you're Sean McDermott and you're watching it over and over and over again, which I also don't think is the right thing to do because you're reliving that moment over and over and over again. And obviously you have to watch film to improve. I personally just didn't think I needed to watch that one game to improve. Maybe I need to go back and watch it and just embrace it, I guess. But until that day, I will continue to stand on the side of not watching it, unlike Sean McDermott. But back to Patrick Mahomes and you kind of knew the Bills were in trouble when he got that first 18-yard pass. And when he got that, picked up those 18 yards on the first down and they had a timeout to stop the clock, like, you kind of knew, like, all right, they are one pass away with Cheetah, with Travis Kelce, and with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. They're coming up with these 15 to 20 yards that they need in order to kick or give Bucker a chance at the field goal. And then the Chiefs wins the coin flip. And when they win the coin flip, at that point, you know, whoever wins this coin flip, that's who's winning the game. Like, neither one of these defenses are stopping these quarterbacks right now. We always talk about offense and defense and how great offense is going to ultimately beat great defense in most cases, unless Draymond Green is on defense and then it doesn't quite go that way. But, you know, those quarterbacks both had it going and no defense was stopping them at that point. And so that then brings us to the rule. And, you know, there's a lot of people discussing how the NFL needs to change the rule. And my question to everyone out there is, and obviously you can't answer here, but, you know, if you want to tweet me some answers or tweet some answers to the volume and, you know, maybe we talk about them next week, maybe they're irrelevant, who knows. But is college football way of doing overtime better than the NFL? And should the NFL adopt what college football does? Or should they just go about it the way they go about it and then, but also just allow the Bills in this instance to have an opportunity to score? But then it kind of gets super long and you got to think about the TV slots and, like, there's so many things that come into play when you're discussing this. And so, you know, a team goes down to score, i.e. Kansas City Chiefs. And then you give Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills an opportunity and they go down to score. Like, do you start back with a kickoff and then you go again? Like, because then that starts to run into other shows that the network may have, other games, if there's other games on, you know, then you run into that issue. What if these quarterbacks go back and forth for, you know, seven possessions in a row? That's severely going to outweigh the time that that is allotted for an overtime. So do you scrap the overtime? Like, there's a ton of things that we can discuss, or, you know, that the NFL can discuss, the changes that can be made. But the reality is, I personally don't think they're going to change it. I think that's kind of their way of going about it. They already made one change, which was, if you get a field goal right there, then the other team has an opportunity to score. They already made that change. I can't really foresee them totally overhauling the rule. I personally don't see it, but I don't know. I don't know. I thought the Cincinnati Bengals game was also an incredible game, and it's incredible to see Joe Burrow, the way he's taken over that team. And Ja'Marr Chase is insane. Like, Ja'Marr Chase is so good. He's probably the best receiver in the NFL right now today as a rookie. And it's interesting because he sat out his last year at LSU. And I was wondering, like, Is he sitting out because he's not going to have a great quarterback? Is he sitting out because he don't want to get hurt? And, you know, most guys, when they do stuff like that, they usually fall in the draft. Ja'Marr Chase didn't fall, and rightfully so, because if you're judging that, if you're judging him off sitting out that last year and you miss Ja'Marr Chase, you have an even bigger issue on your hand. And I was recently listening to someone speak on guys sitting out of bowl games, and Shannon Sharp actually went in on it a little bit. Kirk Herbstreit was discussing some guys sitting out of the bowl games, and he was, I think it was the Ohio State wide receivers, and he was kind of destroying them. And Shannon Sharp went at him, and I applaud Shannon for going at him that way. And one of the things Shannon said was, well, coaches change programs all the time, and you have all of these people leave on these kids or young student athletes, and then once the student athlete does it, it's a problem, you know. And Shannon went in about that, and I thought it was great, incredible, because players aren't treated with the same respect that organization and coaches and general managers are. They're not given the same grace that those people are given, whether, like I said, whether it's general managers, organizations as a whole, coaches. We're just not given that same grace as players. And I don't know if it's because of the clickbait. I don't know what it is, but I think it's ridiculous. And I was appreciative of the way Shannon went in on that topic. So, yeah, man, I hope everyone enjoyed that weekend of football the way I enjoyed it. And now moving on to the association, obviously there are huge, a lot of Russell Westbrook trade talks, trade rumors going around. I know I saw yesterday the Houston Rockets were saying they would trade John Wall for Russell Westbrook and picks. And the reality is, I'm not sure Russell Westbrook gets traded. I don't, if I'm guessing, just as an NBA fan, I don't really foresee it happening, nor do I think it really should happen. You haven't really had the opportunity to see that team healthy and how they could grow together healthy. And I also don't like how Russell Westbrook gets all of the blame for everything going wrong. Like, it's just not possible that one guy is the blame for everything going wrong. So just been kind of keeping up with those trade rumors. As we know, it's that time in the NBA where trade deadline is approaching over the course of the next few weeks. So you're going to hear more and more talks ramp up. You're going to start to see deals made. And then obviously Russell Westbrook is the biggest name in any of these talks. So and he's on the Los Angeles Lakers. So that's always going to take the cake. And that's kind of who we've been hearing about the most in the trade rumors. So, like I said, as a basketball fan, I am excited to see what happens at this trade deadline, and that's just not Russell Westbrook. That's just as a whole. I think that's always an exciting time. You have some guys find new beginnings, that the new beginnings that they need and want, and then you have some guys that don't quite find the new beginning that they're looking for, and it doesn't go right, and that is the uncertainty of the trade market. Number one, most guys, probably 99% of guys, has no say in where they're traded to. It just kind of happens. And a lot of guys find out they're traded on like Instagram and Twitter, which I think is ridiculous and needs to be changed, but it happens. DeMarcus Cousins found out in an interview after the All-Star game in New Orleans that he had been traded to New Orleans, you know, and so you would think then, because we are human beings, that rule would have been changed then, and yet it still hasn't. And so maybe one day it will get changed and we will be treated like the human beings that we are when being told that you have to uproot your family, your children, if you have children, your wife or girlfriend or fiance or whatever it is, that life totally changes for you. And it'd be great as a human being that plays basketball and not just as a basketball player that we're viewed as, that if you if you could find that out the way you should find it out. And that's my hope for not only the NBA, but for all leagues, for anyone who goes through things like this. That's definitely my hope. We'll see if it happens. And lastly, around the association, there's also been these rumors about James Harden testing free agency, which, what a weird time for it to come out. Like, if he is going to test free agency, like, free agency doesn't start till July 1st. It's January. Everybody's trying to do all they can to compete for a championship. And so I thought it's a very weird time for it to come out. But maybe it came out because if you do think James Harden is going to leave, and actually I spoke to y'all about checking out JJ's podcast, so I'm not going to go all the way into this because we discussed this on JJ's podcast. But I'll just sum it up quickly. When LeBron left Cleveland and went to Miami, you no longer really see teams waited out for free agents. They kind of move on if they know a guy isn't going to resign. So maybe that's why it came out. But they are competing for a championship. So I don't know. I just thought it was a little weird that that came out at that time. But James Harden will be a free agent, and he has the right to test free agency if that's what he wants to do. And no one can stop that. He will be an unrestricted free agent. So stuff is getting interesting around the association. And as I said before, it is that time of year where you start to hear all these things. So buckle up your seatbelt, because it sounds like it's about to be a wild ride on this trade deadline. So we shall see. But without further ado, I am going to turn this over, or not turn it over, but I am going to welcome in my brother, NBA All-Star, one-time All-Star, soon to be two-time All-Star, Chicago Bulls slam dunk champion, all-NBA performer, Zach LaVine. Man, this interview is an exciting one for me. You know, obviously, in doing this, you had an opportunity to not only ramble on about my thoughts, as I like to do, but also had an opportunity to sit down with, we've sat down with Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers, and today I am honored to have another future Hall of Famer, a one-time All-Star, soon to be two. Two-time dunk champion, which produced some incredible dunks. But more importantly, went on after that dunk contest to show what an incredible player he is, and became an All-Star. And what we share in common, and what started this relationship, which is growing and it's a lifelong one, is an Olympic gold medalist. I am honored today to have my brother, Zach LaVine. Zach, what up, my dog?
What's up, boy? I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming on. This obviously means the world to me. I have an opportunity to have these conversations. We had T-Mac on last week. But just to talk, not only basketball, but talk life, and just kind of get it all out there, it's always fun for me. But, you know, from Renton, Washington, Seattle, for those of y'all that can't put two and two together.
Outside of it, yeah.
Zach, if I understand correctly, your parents are athletes, right?
Yeah, my dad played professional football. The Portland Breakers is a USFL team back in the day. Was like the other NFL, and then went and played for the Seahawks as well for a couple of years. My mom, extremely athletic, played softball growing up. So it was in my blood from the get-go.
Extremely athletic.
Yeah.
we've seen that, that's for sure. Yeah. and so your dad, he played for the Seahawks. Is that how he ended up in Seattle, or is your dad from Seattle?
No, my dad's from San Bernardino, California. Grew up in SoCal, and ended up meeting my mom there after he retired. So he just ended up staying in the cold, rainy city.
Okay. And I also read that you became a fan of Michael Jordan through the movie Space Jam. You didn't watch basketball before Space Jam's out?
No, so I was a baseball player growing up because my dad, ironically, actually got baseball too. Before he went to college, and then when I was younger, just watching Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan together, I think as a kid, that's the best combination you can get.
By the way, I've heard your dad is out of his mind, especially when it comes to your workouts. I've seen some of the videos in the backyard.
Oh, yeah. Dude's crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. But it got me to where I had to go, man. And me and my dad are best friends. And that's why I wanted to be like him growing up. So I think it's something that just molded me who I am.
That's interesting. And a question that I have as a father, and always trying to find that balance of how much do you push your kid and what's too much. And I've seen growing up some dads that probably pushed their kids way too much and it altered the relationship. It altered the father-son relationship. And for me personally, my relationship with my, obviously my two girls, Olive and Cash, but my son, my relationship is way more important than him ever becoming a basketball star or my two girls becoming stars. My relationship with them is way more important. And so when I see that or hear that, it's kind of heartbreaking because to see a father lose the relationship with their son and to hear you say, my dad is my best friend and how hard he pushed you, what was the thing that kept your relationship so tight and not him pushing you away because he was pushing you so hard in basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big thing. And like you said, it's sad because being a dad and a father is number one. And I want to be there one day after you have kids. But it's something that I had to realize growing up was, you know, how bad he wanted it and wanted it for me. I had to want it that bad as well. And he was pushing me to, you know, he was helping me do all the things that he didn't have. He didn't have a dad growing up. He used to tell me, he said, I wish I had somebody like me that would love and care for you and tell you all the mistakes I made and try to guide you in the right way. So as a youngster, I really realized, like, you know, he's not here to hurt me. He's just trying to help and guide me to be the best person I can be, not just as a basketball, baseball player, whatever it was, but as a man too. So I always respect and appreciate that.
That's what's up. And so you go on from high school and then as the Mr. Basketball in the state of Washington in 2013.
How you getting all these stats, Ray?
I know a little bit, you know, I know a little bit and Jackson is great at what he does as well, but I know a little bit about you, man.
<There you go. laughs>
No, so you're Mr. Basketball, you go on to UCLA. And walk me through your transition and going to UCLA. Because I know for me, and going to Michigan State, I struggled a little bit that first year. I didn't get much time. The odds were kind of against me. And I played as the year went on. I started to play more. But early on, it was a struggle for me. So walk me through you arriving on campus and how your freshman year went.
Man, I mean, coming from Seattle, I mean, obviously, you're not the most highly touted or like really hot play to basketball. We're a little bit slept on in Northwest. So, you know, obviously I did my thing in high school, but I wasn't a McDonald's All-American. I think I was in the top like 75 for players. So I wasn't going in thinking I'm going to be a one and done guy, but always been a worker. And, you know, always when I step on the court was the most confident person just because of the work I put in. So going out there, I had a chip on my shoulder, and then being able to play against pros immediately on campus, you know, the runs up at UCLA at the SAC. So playing against guys like Westbrook, Drew Holiday, former guys like Josh Shipp, and like testing my game out, like right coming straight out of high school and seeing where I was really good for me. And just finding my way. I didn't start at UCLA either, but I came off the bench, had a good role, and really just start picking up momentum from there.
That's funny because I remember watching you at UCLA and I'm like, how are they not starting this kid? Like, this is insane that he's not starting.
Yeah, we had a really good team. And I wasn't upset about not starting because we were really good. I think we were like top five in the country. It was me, Jordan Adams, Kyle Anderson, Norman Powell, the Ware twins. Like, we had a really, Tony Parker, we had a really good team. So, I was always accepting of a role as long as I was able to, you know, go out there and contribute.
And were you the highest draft pick of that group?
Yeah, I think I was. I went 13th. I went 13th. Mm-hmm. So it was you know, it's the way it worked out.
Hey, that's interesting because I think a lot of young guys can learn from that. You know, we all want to be starters. I think that's just the nature of what we do. But for I think there's even more so than starting, there's more power in owning your role. And so if you sit back and you mope about it and I think I'm better than this guy, I think I'm better than that guy, then you start to look at the draft boards, you're climbing up the draft boards, it's very easy for that to start to crumble. But I always try to tell guys, it don't matter if you're starting a game. Are you in the lineup that finishes the game?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what's important. And I remember you being in those lineups closing out games.
Yeah, no, it was big time. And, you know, like you said, accepting your role and talent always shows regardless of when you're playing or where you're, or your role on the team. You know, can you shine in those moments? And I feel like when the opportunity knocked, I opened the door.
Absolutely. And so you're drafted 13th to the Minnesota Timberwolves with a young Andrew Wiggins, with a young Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite go the way everyone wanted to go. I personally think you guys were very young. And so people don't understand how important experience is in this league. And I felt like they never gave y'all enough time to grow together and kind of moved on fast. What did you think or feel about that?
I mean, like you said, experience and us being extremely young. I mean, we're 18, 19 years old all together, you know, sharing the court. It's nothing is going to be perfect because you have to go through those bumps and bruises. And, we, you know, realistically, we only had 2 to 3 years to really, like, everybody wanted the process to happen so fast and us to be good so fast. It just doesn't work like that sometimes. So, but growing up, having those experiences, you know, those are my guys, and it was really fun. But it, like you said, I don't think they let it marinate enough for us to really see what could have happened.
Do you think that group could have been successful if they did let y'all play, or would you have just preferred for it to go the way it went?
I mean, I think everything happens for a reason, but, you know, it would have been tough, realistically, you know, in this, it would have been tough for everybody to stay on the team from a financial standpoint because we're all, you know, really top-level guys. But we never got to the point to find out if it would work or not.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think financially it could have worked, though. I mean, you look at our team, for instance. We have Clay making the max, obviously Steph making the super, super, super max. But you have Clay making the max. You have Wiggs making his max at what the max was at that time.
Yep.
And I'm also making my max for what I could have signed for. And so I think it could have worked financially.
It could have, but you guys also won, you know, a handful of championships, and we're in Minnesota in a smaller market. So you never know, bro. I don't know. It would have been tough, but, you know, like you said, you never know.
And so you were traded to Chicago, and Chicago hadn't really rebounded. I mean, obviously you had those few years in there with Tibbs and D-Rose, and Jimmy had a solid run there, but Chicago never truly rebounded since Michael Jordan left. And obviously we all saw the documentary and how Jerry Krause broke the team up. He told them that was it for Phil. Yep. It don't matter. And they never rebounded from that. And now I think everyone's finally starting to see that rebound. But walk me through those years in Chicago. I found out an interesting stat when we were at the Olympics, which was Zach hadn't won 3 games in a row.
Yeah.
Since college, I think it was.
4 games in a row since college. That was my first 4-game winning streak.
Which is that's nuts. Interesting.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
You gotta play the card. Going to another rebuilding team. I was coming off ACL injury when I got traded as well, so I only got to play about, I think it was less than 20 games my first year there. And for anybody who knows, coming off ACL, that first year isn't really you're just getting your feedback. And then that next year is really when you become back to, you know, who you are and all that training comes in. So it was a great opportunity for me to go out there and showcase all the work I put in the off season, you know, because I work out and I train, you know, like I said, not to be a number two, number three guy. Like, you know, I work out and I want to be a superstar, and that's what I work for. And I think when that opportunity came, you know, I wanted to be ready for it.
Absolutely. And I know for me, when I play in Chicago, every time I hear the music in the starting lineup, it feels like Michael Jordan is about to run out.
Yeah.
Because that's just, like, that's where we all learned that sound. Like, that's yep. where we learned, you know, I can't really, I'm not very good musically, so I can't really make the sound on my own. But we all know the intro song of the Chicago Bulls. And like I said, for me personally, when we're playing there, every time I hear it, I look at the tunnel, like Michael Jordan's about to run out.
Like, and Joe's about to walk out.
Absolutely. And then yeah. it's only Zach LaVine run out, and I'm a little disappointed, but it's all man. Good. No, but cool. So you then you go to Chicago Bulls. Initially, knowing that the team was so bad, did you feel pressure and going in there to live up to what the Bulls were, or because the team was already bad, there was no pressure?
I mean, me coming from a rebuilding team, I didn't know any different. And that's where, like I said, you have to play the cards you're dealt, and that's where experience and learn how to win all comes into play. Because, you know, I had to learn for myself what it took and to go into that. So it was a process. Obviously, you go out there and try to do everything you can, but, you know, I was just looking forward to the opportunity to, you know, play my game and then hopefully, you know, have the Bulls build around me as I show progression.
Now, the year is 2021. Mm-hmm. You become an all-star yep. for the first time. You win an Olympic gold medal. Sound like yep. a damn good year to me, my man.
Yeah, hey, man, look, a lot of work goes into that, and it just, you know, it started manifesting. And then obviously going into this year with the year that we're having, the additions that we brought in, it's been incredible.
And talk me through those additions. And I want to hear about one in particular. Lonzo has been a great addition. Alex Caruso has been a great addition. But DeMar, and, you know, going into those talks, there's a lot of talk about you and DeMar. Y'all play the same position. Yep. How is that going to work together? Before we get to DeMar signing, did you have any conversations with DeMar about coming to Chicago? Or was that all done with DeMar and Arturos?
But they went through their own process of going to get him. And then obviously I called DeMar myself when we were in Tokyo. had a big conversation with him. And I was all on board because I wanted a guy like that. For all the narratives that got put out about it, I think it was stupid. You know, for people that don't know basketball, don't know him as a person or a basketball player, like DeMar DeRozan's all NBA, you know, players. Like you say, future Hall of Fame player. He's proven this before in the narratives that got put out. Because he was in San Antonio, like he's been playing great basketball for a long time.
Yes,
I don't know
yes.
where it came from. So it was great to have a guy like that, and the way we've been able to work our chemistry on the court has been it's been like a hand in a glove.
I think it's definitely been beautiful. And speaking of those narratives, obviously, as you know, I'm very close to DeMar as well.
Yeah,
and we would always talk. Through all of that stuff going on, DeMar is, you know, he's washed up. He's kind of at the end. Mid-range jump shots, he doesn't shoot threes. And you hear all of that talk really for the last better part of the last two years since he went to the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously he continued to push. And one thing that you and I both know is how he works.
Yeah.
And, like, works nonstop. But what was it for, if you've had these conversations, I'm not even sure if you've had the conversation, but what was it for AK and the Bulls franchise that saw DeMar and said, no, he can fit here and this will work? What was it that pushed them towards this direction? Because I don't think his market was that hot, especially when the Lakers went away, which goes to show, I always talk about talent evaluators and how they evaluate talent. But what was it that pushed y'all to get over what everyone was saying about DeMar?
I haven't personally talked with AK and Mark about what made them like him, but when they came to me and said, how will this work? I was all for it. You know, we needed somebody that obviously I knew I could go to battle with every single day that's been in those positions. I haven't been to those playoffs like we were talking about before. And someone who's had big time success in the playoffs, somebody who has a calming presence in the fourth quarter and go down and make big shots and be a, you know, me and him can be a, you know, a 1-2 punch, you know, throughout the whole game. It really has been like a match made in heaven. Him playing in the mid range, me being able to get to the cup and shoot three. You know, we've been able to do pretty much everything, and just that presence he has, man. You know, he has just such a confidence and a calming presence that's been able to help us this year.
Absolutely, and it seems like everyone has taken on that demeanor. But yeah. I think when I'm watching the Bulls, whether it's following along on Instagram, whether it's watching the game, you know, we're sitting here talking about DeMar. But what I see when I'm watching the Bulls, or like I said on Instagram, I see a totally different Zach LaVine. I see a Zach LaVine that is so certain of himself that has kind of dialed everything up. I know one of the conversations that we had this summer was, hey man, you are Zach LaVine. Like you are that good, and embody that. And to me, I think as great as DeMar has been, you and I both know how it is to have one great player on the team playing great and no one else. Yeah. And so as great as DeMar has been, you have been equally as great. And although you've always played at the level that you're playing at, you've always put up the numbers and all those things, I think it's something to say for a guy that is certain of himself and carries himself that way. And it looks to me that there has been a change in you. Am I accurate? Am I off?
No, 100%. Because I remember me and you having that conversation after practice. And, you know, it was big for me to go out there and play on the level of guys of my talent and better than me. And me to accept a role on a team where, you know, I'm not going to be the number one option, the scoring option, you know, and we all had to find our roles. And I've given you credit. Like, the reason we won that gold medal, Dre, you know, KD was by far the best player on the team. But, you know, without you, we wouldn't have won that. You were the overall leader, but you accepted your role and played it for what it was. I think coming into the season, I never had that type of mindset. So by any means necessary, just try to find out a way to win, how I can, you know, improve my game to play both sides of the floor and then also share the floor with another dynamic, you know, guy as DeMar has been and still be myself. I've been extremely confident. Like you said, DeMar has been off the charts. I know I've been right there with him. So it's
absolutely,
you know, it's been really fun. And to play winning basketball and have this type of season for both of us has been, it's been so fun.
Absolutely. And staying in Tokyo, because I do want to discuss that. That was such an incredible trip. Obviously for us winning gold, but I always tell people what we did over there was special. And it wasn't that we won the gold medal that was special. We built a bond amongst that team that I don't think most people truly understands. And the reality is when we're over there, and you can speak to this too, when we were over there, it felt like, including America, that the whole world was against us and wanted us to lose.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Like, I mean, you're looking on like obviously on the phone because you don't get ESPN over there, but you're looking on the phone and you have Americans dogging us.
And doubting you.
Like, doubting us, dogging us. The world has caught up. These guys can't win, blah, blah, blah. And I felt like we had to come together the way we did in order to win.
First, it was really us versus the world, especially with us being able, because of the pandemic, to not go anywhere and having to be so close-knit each and every day. Like you said, it definitely bonded us. And for me, being my first experience, you know, over there, it was incredible.
No, it was. And I think for me personally, obviously that was my second one. But, you know, and I appreciate what you just said about me on that team, by the way. One thing that I learned my first time around in 2016 where, man, I'm not sure how many minutes per game I averaged at Olympics. It was probably somewhere around six to 8 minutes a game.
Yeah.
But the one thing that stood out to me was since winning that 2016 gold medal. Not one person asked me how many points I averaged per game. Not one person asked me how many rebounds I averaged per game. Not one person asked me how many minutes I played per game. The only thing anyone ever says was, you won a gold medal, didn't you? Absolutely, no. I won a gold medal. And so for me to then bring that mindset to this team and trying to help guys understand, hey, man, obviously on this time around, I had a bigger impact in playing. Mm-hmm. You know, now everyone has an impact. You know, we can speak of Keldon Johnson. You know, everyone put up so much fuss about Keldon making the team. And I always tell people, Keldon was one of the reasons we won that. The energy that he brought every single day, practice, we don't want to go to practice. Keldon in there, loud, bringing energy.
Happy, yeah.
I don't think people truly understand that. And that was me. Like, I was Keldon six years ago. I was Keldon. And so I understood that. And like I said, I played a bigger role now. But for instance, it came down to, like, who's going to start, me or Bam? I'm telling Coach Pop, like, I don't care. Like, start Bam. Who cares? That don't matter to me. And I don't think people truly realize how important a guy settling into his role on that U.S. team is in order to win that gold.
No, it was big time. And what you said earlier, winning trumps everything. Absolutely. Nobody asked you how many minutes you play. You won the gold medal. Winning trumps everything. And everybody was happy with the role that they had and that we got to celebrate with the gold medal. It was that I think that's what the main thing that I brought back, like you said, to the NBA this year, me having my old role back with my team. Winning trumps everything, and that's what we have to go out there and do.
No doubt. And as soon as we got back from Tokyo, which we all flew back together, news comes out maybe a week and a half later that you had left your agent and signed with Rich Paul and Clutch Sports. And I thought that was a very big deal, because the reality is that you were with Bill Duffy and Niemer.
Yeah.
And it's not that they were doing a bad job, or, you know, no. I know for me personally, and I can only speak on my own experience. Yeah. When I signed with Clutch Sports, it wasn't that my previous agent, BJ Armstrong, was doing a bad job. I thought he was doing a good job, and we had a close relationship. I just thought, for me and where I was in my life and the things that I wanted to do, that Clutch moving forward was the best fit for me. It didn't necessarily make BJ bad. It didn't make Wasserman bad. Yeah. I just felt that was the best decision for me. What was it for you that made you want to make that switch?
It, like you just said, Bill and Nima, I love those guys to death. They helped me grow as a person and helped me grow as a man into this league. You know, I loved them. I still talk to them all the time. But, you know, sometimes you have to go off and do something that's right for you at the right time. And I think me at this stage of my career, Clutch lined up with everything that I was going moving forward to and even into the future. And, you know, I really appreciate what they did, but, you know, I really appreciate what Rich and Clutch is doing for me now and moving forward, because that's the path I'm on.
Absolutely. And like I said, I saw that you made that move. I thought it was a great move, and like you said, and just who you are becoming. And, you know, now this summer, you're having a great season. You're about to be an all-star. Your team is right there tied for first place in the Eastern Conference. You know, so obviously looking, albeit that y'all get healthy, because y'all been bitten by the injury.
Been a little banged up lately, man. Been a little banged up lately.
Yeah, y'all been bitten by the injury bug like we have. So albeit that y'all get healthy, now you're going into your first playoffs and you're able to compete for what hopes to be a championship. But and speaking of y'all getting healthy, it looked like y'all have found a hidden gem in being hurt in Ayo.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on him? What does he bring to the table that you like or love?
He's a dog. You know, he has a chip on his shoulder. Was a second round pick. Was, you know, one of the players of the year in college. Kid really knows how to play. Does whatever is asked. Will play defense. Will go out there and score a game if he has to. Play the point guard. I mean, he has a great feel for the game. And you know, we appreciate him. And with us being out, gave him an opportunity to go out there and start getting more comfortable and doing everything he has. And now with us being back, me and DeMar even said, man, keep playing this way because we're going to need it. And
absolutely.
You know, I think that's how sometimes when opportunity happens, you go out there and start becoming who you're meant to be.
Absolutely. And I went on JJ Redick's podcast that'll drop this week. And one thing that we discussed was the importance of team and the importance of culture within a team. And the reason I am bringing that up is staying along the lines of IU. If you and DeMar aren't going about things the way y'all are going about things, being true professionals, and Vooch as well, because Vooch is an ultimate pro, and Caruso, and Lonzo, obviously. But, you know, whenever you're speaking of a team, you're always going to talk about the two top dogs, just as how it goes. Yeah. But do you feel that the importance of culture and winning has helped move him along? Because as a young player, you also went to a Minnesota team that didn't have culture, and it's kind of just guys out there doing what they do. Can you see the difference or the importance of culture and winning in him as opposed to what you were giving your rookie year?
100%, because you're coming into a totally different environment with experience, and I can include myself being a, you know, 8-year pro now, you know, seeing guys like me in the gym early, guys like DeMar staying afterwards, getting their work in and then going getting treatment, guys like Alex Caruso, who's won a championship, speaking during film sessions and walkthroughs, Lonzo Ball sacrificing himself and pointing out defensive coverages. Like, I didn't have that. You know, like you said, it was just it was just rolling the ball out and guys just playing. So, even coming from a winning program in Illinois, now coming into this, this is a totally different thing that I have, but it's helped him push along his game, at least I feel like, to where this is a normal thing and this is how it's supposed to be ran.
Absolutely. And I want to backtrack a little bit and talk again about pre-star Zach LaVine. And what I want to talk about is actually an event that I attended with a bright-ass yellow jacket on. That was the dunk contest. I'm not sure I would ever wear that. Well, I didn't believe I would ever wear that jacket again. I actually gave a jacket to Mr. Fab because I'm like, I'll never wear this again. I was thinking about that jacket a couple nights ago. Like, man, I should have kept that jacket. I'll throw that on some All Black Nowadays and rock out. But I personally thought that was, and I've watched a ton of dunk contests. I'm 31. I've probably been watching the dunk contest since I was 4 or 5 years old. I personally thought that was one of the best dunk contests I've ever seen. And it was pretty much what it came down to. Was you and Aaron Gordon. If I'm not mistaken, DeMar was in that dunk contest.
No, DeMar, what he was going to be. I remember talking to him because we played Toronto like 3 days before the All-Star break. And he said, man, I was going to be, because it was in Toronto.
So
I said, bro, I was about to be in the All-Star, the dunk contest until you put your name in there.
And I remember correctly, he's like, man, I'm not about to jump with them young ones.
Do you
feel like that was one of the best dunk contests ever?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't base any things on era and like impact like what Dominique and Michael had or like Vince's dunk contest, but you have to put that up there to be one of the best dunk contests just on the pure skill, athleticism in the 50s that we were doing. And it was a toss up, and it just came down to who had the best dunk at the end of the overtime. And I tried to go between the legs and the free throw line. That was the first time I tried that, and I made it. So
that's the first time you ever tried it?
That was the first time I ever tried it. First time and only time. Happened, you know, so.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting. That's interesting. And obviously that was up against Aaron Gordon, who went on to give himself the nickname Mr. 50. What do you think or make of that?
I mean, AG, look, he's had a bunch of times where he could have won a dunk contest. Absolutely. And, you know, it's sometimes it's unfortunate because not everybody can win. And I at the end of it even said, like, hey, man, look, we should both be sharing this because just for the culture and for what we did for this, you know, event, you know, it was big time. But, you know, AG definitely is going to be cemented in dunk contest history, even if he didn't win it.
No, I agree 100%. I actually thought the same thing. Like, man, just stop this now. Let them both win.
Yeah.
And we go on about our night because Toronto was definitely a great time. But can you ever see yourself participating in a dunk contest again, or are those days behind you?
Oh, it's over. Yeah, it's over. it's done. I try. I can still get up. You know that, but it's not the forefront of my mind anymore. And you know, now with me logging more and more minutes, you know, I was only playing like 28 minutes a game then. So I go out there and jump all the time. So no, I'm saving my dunks for the, you know, if you try to come over and set a charge or something like that.
That's the thing though. I'm never coming over and try to set the charge. I think you didn't try it before I blocked it.
Yeah, you blocked it.
And then you try and I got out the way. I ain't no fool. What you're not dealing with here is a fool. I'm not crazy. I keep trying to tell Miles Bridges, who infamously went out and said publicly that the one guy he wants to dunk on is me.
Yeah.
I try to tell Miles all the time, you're not going to dunk on me. And the reason you're not going to dunk on me is because I'm only going to jump if I know I have the advantage.
Yeah.
And if there is even an inkling of not having the advantage, and when I say advantage, I don't mean advantage to block the shot. Although you want to block the shot. I need to be in a position where I can foul you where you can't make that shot. And I try to tell Miles this all the time. Like, Miles, I'm only going to block your shot, foul you, or move out the way. Those won't equal out to you dunking on me. It's just not going to happen. So you may want to take that word of advice too. But Prime MJ, Kobe, VC, and you, what's happening in that dunk contest? Wow.
See, a lot of people don't put Kobe in there, and Kobe was one hell of a dunker, man.
Hey, now. That's how I first learned about Kobe, was in the dunk contest with the fro between the legs. Like, back then, between the legs wasn't common. Exactly. Like, Isaiah Ryder did it. But it wasn't a common dunk, and Kobe was doing all that. But what's happening in that dunk contest?
I mean, MJ's going to get the biggest fan reaction. You can argue. Vince is going to come with like the most, I would say, creative. Because it's going to be a toss up, man. I'll never put myself against anywhere. I think it'll be me and Vince in the final, you know. But I think Vince might take me, because Vince, I always go against the guys that, you know, came before me. And Vince came with some stuff. It'll be me or Vince. It just depends on who makes their first dunk. That's what I'll say.
Ladies and gentlemen, Zach LaVine just eliminated Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Let that marinate for a minute. No,
it's a dunk contest.
Let that marinate. It's funny because last week, as I said, we had T-Mac on, and I asked T-Mac. I said, T-Mac, back in those Raptor days, you know how you jumping guys do after practice, y'all doing all the dunks while I go sit down and watch and talk my jump. But I was asking him, I said, you or Vince back in those days dunking? And with he didn't even blink. Vince Carter, by far. Like, not even close. And so it's interesting that that's who you went with as well, because I don't think people realize, number one, how athletic Vince was, but number two, how good of a player Vince was.
How good of a dunker almost trumped how good of a player he was. Like, the dude's a straight-up Hall of Famer, 26,000 points, averaged, you know, what, 28, 29, 30 points per game a couple of times. Like, that's, you don't do that by dunking. You know, you're off the chart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I think, I always tell people, I think Vince had an incredible career, and I think he is one of the most talented players that has ever stepped foot in the NBA. So it's great to see you give him his flowers, because that doesn't happen often. And like I said, when you're talking any category that includes Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, and, you know, and the two other guys are the ones that walk out of that conversation, because I too believe that you would have been up there. You put on one of the greatest dunk contest performances that we've ever seen. And not once, but twice. And so I two times, right?
You want, what's funny about it, you remember how you just said T-Mac adventure dunk after practice? You want to know who beat me in a dunk contest that you wouldn't think of?
Wiggs.
Exactly.
Listen, man, I have this picture on my phone.
I tell you.
I have this picture on my phone of Wiggs jumping, and he literally jumped for a rebound. And
like
his
this.
Neck is above the square.
Yeah.
The top of the square. Like, I couldn't believe it.
He never wanted to do it. He would just casually, like, after practice, we would dunk. He would just casually do some stuff I'd never seen before. I'd be like, wow. And that's coming, you know, I did what I did in dunk contest. It was crazy.
Well, let's see. We got Wiggs, who's going to make the All-Star game this year. And yep. We all need to be pushing for Wiggs to also get in the dunk contest.
I don't know if you're going to do that.
No chance he's doing that.
No
chance. Hey, but before I let you get out of here, I don't want to take up much more of your time. I am very appreciative of you coming on. The last thing I want to discuss, you are a free agent coming up this summer. How are you approaching free agency? Are you excited about it? I know for me, I never wanted to hit free agency. Like I signed my extension. I hit free agency once, but I was a restricted free agent, which was after my third year. And I had to hit it that time because that second year I didn't play. So I needed that third year to earn my money. And then obviously my current contract, I signed the extension. So I never wanted to hit free agency. But how are you approaching this? Are you excited about it? Are you not worried about it at all right now and just playing? I think that's a little cliche because we all think about things, especially when talking about the type of money that you're going to be up for.
Yeah, no, obviously I'm excited for it. Now, we're focused on the year and everything like that, and my whole focus is on winning. But, you know, I'm excited. I've never been a free agent. You know, last time I was a restricted free agent. I had to sign an offer sheet, you know, so not a lot of people go through that. So I'm excited about it. And, you know, obviously I got, you know, a great support system with Rich and Clutch that's going to, you know, take care of me and my business on that end. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, because it's a new experience. You know, not a lot of people get to go through it and have a choice. So I'm excited.
And Hunter as well.
Yes. And my wife as well.
Zach, my brother.
Go ahead. No, you know, we're extremely excited. Obviously, like what we built in Chicago and what we're going through this year, you know, I'm extremely happy. And I know that, you know, for right now, this is my home. But, you know, it's, you know, I'm excited because it's a new experience.
I must say, I am excited that you're going through this with Rich. And the reason I am excited is because I know the way Rich goes about his contract negotiations. And I've had two agents before Rich, so I've gone through contract negotiations with now three agents, Rich being one of them.
Yeah.
And he goes about it in a way totally different than I had seen before. And I think that one of the things that I was most impressed about was the way my contract was drawn up. Because I think so many guys get caught up in how much money is it? What's the dollar amount? And the reality is there are a lot of little nuances in contracts that if you don't understand, you can get screwed over, you know?
Yep.
And Rich is actually the one who taught me all of those things. I mean, I'm talking about I'm in year 7 or 8 of my career and 7 and didn't know those things that he's taught me, whether it was the payment schedule, love of the game, you know, all of these different things that he included in my contract that really made my contract worth more than the actual dollar amount.
Which is crazy that you didn't know about that until your 8th year. So I think that's what I'm looking forward to, Rich, because like you said, he's really a savant about it, you know, and it's just cool.
No, absolutely. So I am excited to see you go through your process, brother. But even more importantly, I am as excited and watching you and DeMar tear apart the Eastern Conference. And I think it only goes up from here. Like this is year one that we're seeing it. I think it only goes up here from here for you guys. And you know, I was talking to DeMar and you know, and just looking at y'all roster, like that's going to continue to improve. And you guys are going to continue to improve as your two workers. So I'm extremely excited about it, brother. Good luck the rest of the way. Good luck with getting y'all guys back healthy. I'm looking forward to getting back healthy and getting out there too, but I can't thank you enough for coming on, my brother.
I appreciate it, man. You know, I'll talk to you anytime. In the off season, we'll enjoy a nice glass of wine together, dog.
We definitely gonna do that. Oh, by the way, I see you got a New Balance hoodie on. What's that about?
I'm a little bit of a free agent right now too, so I'm just I'm messing around with all these different brands and enjoying my time there too. I'm a free agent everywhere right now. It's crazy.
I love to see it. Well, it works. It goes hand in hand, my brother. But good luck the rest of the way, bro. I appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you, dog. Stay safe. Get healthy, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Man, that was incredible. Thanks again to Zach for coming on. As you know, Zach is one of the brightest young stars that we have in our game. And I know it doesn't quite seem like he's that young because he's 8 years in now. But what you do have to remember is that he came into this league at 19. So he is very young, still with a lot of runway to go in order to continue to build the Hall of Fame career that he's building. And I, as a brother of his, as a big brother of his, is excited to continue to watch his journey. There was so much talk about him not winning. And as T-Mac said to us a week ago, winning has a lot to do with the players that are around you and not just the one guy who is the guy on the team. And as you can see, Zach, they went out and got Zach some help there in Chicago. And you could kind of see that last year when they kind of did the overhaul and brought in Vucevic from Orlando. They traded some high picks that they have drafted, but also they gave up some picks as well, some draft picks. And so they put the talent around him, and he is flourishing. They are flourishing, and it's a beautiful thing to see. So I'm excited to continue to watch Zach's career. I hope y'all are equally or even more excited to continue to watch his growth, because I think it will continue to grow at the rate or even faster rate than it's been growing. And Zach is embodying the star that he's become. And I love that. And I think everyone has to do that. I had a press conference before an NBA Finals when we're playing Toronto Raptors, and the guy was asking me that I think I was the best. I don't think you can be the best if you don't believe that you are the best. And so I think that's important. And I think that is a huge part of Zach's growth that we've seen this year and the winning that they're doing, because now you can follow that. And it's a beautiful thing. So that's a wrap for episode 10 of the Draymond Green Show. Wherever you get your podcast, make sure you check it out. Check all of the episodes out. They are there for you to enjoy. We love doing this. I love doing this. Try to bring some knowledge and advice and great interviews to your headphones, to your radio if you're listening in the car, to your computer screen or your phone if you're watching on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe for the Volumes YouTube channel, and you can check me out, but also you can check others out as well, other great podcasts. And so with that said, that's a wrap for episode 10. Until next week, peace.